Greetings, and this is Kick the Puppy from September the 9th, 2018. I'm here with RJ Jacob. In the news this week, let's see, there's an article from Russia Today talking about how in Canada now, in Toronto, Canada, North America's first sex doll brothel has opened. So this is a brothel, like a whorehouse, where you can go and pay to have sex with a sex doll. This is a bit odd. I mean, it seems like a brothel would at least have real girls. But I think that this kind of thing must appeal to a certain kind of clientele. And these are clientels that really just don't want anything to do with women, period. It seems like the kind of customer for something like this would probably be the kind of guy that is heterosexual. He's not gay. He's physically attracted to women, but apparently just doesn't want to be around women or otherwise doesn't like women to the point that he doesn't want to talk to one or deal with one, not even a prostitute. The next best thing would be a sex doll, where this is just a doll that gets the job done and you don't really have to have a conversation or anything like that. What I'm thinking about is I'd really hate to be the guy who has to clean these dolls after they're done. I mean, that's
the horror bath.
Yeah, that seems like that.
And you know what's weird is they actually warn about STDs here. They say that they encourage that their clients use condoms on these dolls. Yeah, it's like, is it any different than a human? You know, it's like, because there is a horror bath after, like you mentioned, they clean them, but it's like, this is just really weird.
Yeah, I can't say this would be my thing.
It's almost like I want to be against this almost. I feel like we don't need these.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of animal brothels before. In some countries, particularly underdeveloped countries, they actually have animal brothels for people that have that fetish. They actually outlawed that in Denmark a few years ago.
I remember a few years ago there was a guy in Canada who tried to order like a child sex doll torso from Japan, and like the police intercepted it, and the courts are trying to figure out if this is like child pornography. But you know, would you say this is a sign of decline? Like right there with like opiate and opioid overdoses at an all-time high. You got suicide rates at like a 30-year high. Birth rates are at a low. Mass shootings on the rise, and then sex dolls.
Yeah, well, you know, it's parallel to this thing that they call the incel movement now. Like, they talk about these people called the incels, which is an abbreviation for involuntary celibates, and which, you know, it means what it sounds like, and that is just loser guys who can't get laid, period. You know, these are guys who live in their, you know, they're at age 30, they live with them in their mom's basement or something like that and can't actually find a girl. And it sounds like these would be the kind of guys who might go to the sex doll brothel or something like that. So now even the incels can get laid.
Yeah. Really serious about taking yourself off the sexual marketplace, you know, if it's gotten that bad for you, it's like, go to Europe. It's like, sex is easier. I mean, taxes are harder, but sex is supposed to be easier. It's like, go to France, go to Germany. It's like,
yeah, it seems though that the sex doll thing, I don't think that appeals necessarily to guys who just can't get laid, period. Because, I mean, most guys could still get laid with a hooker if they wanted to. It seems like it's more just an anti-woman thing. It seems like these are guys who just don't like women. I mean, they just don't want to deal with even a prostitute. You know, it's like they don't want to have a conversation with a woman. You know, they just want the doll to get the gun. You know, it's like the perfect thing, I guess, for some of these MRA, like, woman hater types. And I guess not the MRAs, it's the misogyny movement, you know, the He-Man Woman Haters Club, the modern version. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like that, because, I mean, who else would want to be interested in something like that? Or maybe they just have a fetish for dolls and those is all kinds of weird stuff. You know, I had a professor when I was in college that was a psychologist, and one of the things that she did in her clinical practice was she specialized in treating people with all kinds of weird sexual disorders. And she used to talk about a client that had this thing where he wanted to shit in women's shoes. You know, that was his big sexual fetish. You know, it was a sexual turn on to actually take a shit in women's shoes. So it's like, you know, whatever. But this sounds like a variation of something like that, just some off-the-wall stuff. Yeah. Coming out of England, a transgender woman rapes female inmates in women's jail in England. So apparently the backstory to this is there was a person a man who was claiming to be a transgender woman, so apparently wanting to convert to womanhood, who was imprisoned in an all-female jail because, well, he's a woman, right? And apparently while he was there, or she technically, if we want to be politically correct about it, managed to rape some female inmates while being incarcerated in a female jail. This is certainly an interesting story because there's sort of a conflict here between transgender rights and women's rights. If you have a prison inmate, what kind of prison do you put them in if they claim they're transgendered? I suppose from my own perspective, I would say that if I were a prison inmate these days, I would probably claim to be transgender. That way I could get shipped to a female prison. As to how you would handle this in a more practical sense, I don't really know. It's kind of like these stories we hear about nowadays where you have high school kids who claim, you know, they're male, but they claim to transition to female. So then they get to participate in female athletics and on female sports teams and things like that. And, of course, they always win. There was a case a while back of a person that was a transgender former male turned female who actually was in the MMA, one of these MMA leagues, fighting female combatants. And, of course, you know, this is a guy that cut his dick off and started claiming to be a woman. And then he joins the MMA to fight women and beat up women professionally. So it's it seems like there would be something of a clash there between transgender rights and women's rights. And I know that on the far left nowadays, there's a lot of back and forth between what they call the TERFs. The TERFs are the trans exclusionary radical feminists. And these are radical feminists who do not like the transgender folks. And of course, a lot of the pro-transgender folks do not like the TERFs. In fact, I know I saw a Twitter post once by Spencer Sunshine, who was a leading Antifa writer. For those who aren't familiar with him.
Isn't that the guy who put us on like a top 20 villain list?
Oh, yeah, actually, yeah, he did. I think that had to do with an article he wrote about a right-wing infiltration of Occupy Wall Street or something like
that. We were trying to woo.
Yeah, we just made this little video. Well, it was more you guys, you and some other people. I think you and Miles and some other people around ETS made that video. We made a video about Occupy Wall Street back when that was going on. That was some years ago now. And this guy starts attacking us as right-wing fascist infiltrators into Occupy Wall Street. He actually had a Twitter post once that I saw where he was talking about who should be excluded from the left, from the political left. And of course, they've always got this thing about there are always fascists trying to infiltrate the left. So his criteria were cops, Marxist-Leninists, anti-Semites, and TERFs. These were the four groups that he wanted to exclude from the political left, saying you can't really be on the left. Cops, I can certainly understand. Marxist-Leninists are problematic, given that we're anarchists. Anti-Semites, you know, depending on how you define that. And TERFs, well, that's a new form of anti-Semitism, anti-transgenderism or something like that. I don't know. But this is interesting, though, that in Britain you actually had a transgender woman in a female prison that was raping female inmates.
In the U.S., didn't Obama put protections on transgender inmates? Wasn't there like a – and then Trump came
out? I don't know about prisons. I think with Obama it was schools. Through the Department of Education, Obama's Department of Education, they were trying to
This was the Bureau of Prisons.
Okay.
Well, I'll have to look it up. Oh,
maybe it's both. It may have been both. Yeah, because, you know, during Obama's tenure, they opened the military to transgender people as well. And then Trump reversed that also. So, yeah. Speaking of Obama, Obama gave a speech about bullying where he was clearly attacking the Trump administration. He didn't really mention Trump by name, but he was attacking the Trump administration and accusing, the Trump of engaging in bullying, like saying he wants to shut down the press that's critical of him. Or then there was the Muslim travel ban thing and all these different things that's gone on with Trump. And Obama is talking about bullying, about how this is un-American and all these kinds of things, which I think is a bit precious considering Obama was Mr. Drone Wars. I mean, this is a guy that has drones flying all over the world, bombing weddings and things like that in places like Yemen and Pakistan and all of that. And then he's over here in the United States talking about how Donald Trump shouldn't be saying all these mean things, which is pretty interesting. It goes to show what two-faced, lying hypocrites all of these people are, the entire political class. I mean, Obama on the liberal side of the spectrum is thought of as a saintly figure practically because he was the first black president and all of that. But here he is, Mr. Drone Wars, the guy that not only strengthened but expanded the National Security Authorization Act for domestic surveillance and things of that nature. All of these other things like that. So political class shows its hypocrisy once again. And Trump actually responded to this speech. He claims he fell asleep watching the Obama speech about this, about Obama's obviously attacking him. I have to say, I only watched one Obama speech all the way through, and this had to do with this writing project I was working on. What I was watching was a video of one of Obama's inauguration speeches that was supposed to be some great classic speech. And, I started getting pretty bored with it just a few minutes in. I always thought Obama was really overrated in terms of being a great speaker and all those kinds of things. I mean, yeah, he's articulate and all that, as compared to he doesn't speak as bluntly as say Trump or like George W. Bush did. But so what? Other than that, I don't really see what's so great about this guy, but some interesting, a little bit of comedy here, this back and forth between Obama and Trump over bullying. Some more serious news that came out this week. There was an op-ed in the New York Times, and this was supposedly a piece by an official that's supposedly high up in the Trump administration talking about how the resistance is going on from within the ranks of the administration. So this is supposedly a Trump administration official that's saying, yeah, don't worry, America, because we're here in the administration resisting the president and things like that. And a number of funny things have happened about this, like a group of bookies, the Las Vegas, whatever, Atlantic City bookies have come out and tried to make odds about who actually wrote this piece. Apparently the leading candidate is Mike Pence, the vice president. Apparently the bookies are saying, well, this is the dude that's most likely to have written this, which I find a little hard to believe. I mean, first of all, Mike Pence, in terms of his politics, is definitely more of a neocon than Trump is. And so it's understandable how he could be used as a tool by the neocons to undermine the Trump administration. On the other hand, he doesn't really seem bright enough to be a double agent on that level, but then maybe that's his cover. He just acts stupid, so nobody knows how smart a double agent he really is. That's what somebody was saying on Facebook in response to this particular article. So who knows? I had somebody else say, well, maybe Trump himself actually wrote the op-ed piece in the New York Times.
Trump did pose as his own publicist once.
So maybe he did. I wouldn't be so. Well, he probably didn't write it himself. If that happened, he probably had somebody write it for him and just say, yeah, here's $100,000 in hush money, and write something up and makes it look like you're an official in my administration trying to undermine me. I could totally see him doing that. I could totally see him doing that.
Put your name on it. Otherwise, it's like do your damn job,
Probably
someone trying to cover their ass. Maybe if things go bad, we can still have jobs in D.C.
Yeah, that would make sense as well. But this is somebody that, if Trump gets impeached, they want to keep their position. Or if the Trumpians fall out of favor with the Republicans, in the next Republican administration, let's say somebody that's a more traditional Republican gets elected at some point in the future, if they want a job in that administration too. Like, let's say there's a future Mitt Romney administration or something. They want to be able to work for anyone. That probably has a lot to do with it. It's probably somebody of that nature, some kind of functionary bureaucrat that they just want to cover their ass from every angle. Don't blame me for Trump.
Right.
Texas passed an interesting law that apparently goes into effect today or yesterday or somewhere in there. Now in Texas, you can carry an open sword. Which is interesting. That sounds like the kind of law they would pass in Texas. But
this is actually probably not a bad law. I remember reading an article about how thousands of people in New York have been arrested because of like an old 50s era knife law in New York, where it's like it's something like 50,000 folding knife prosecutions over like a 10-year period because of all the stop and frisk laws where they were busting just tens of thousands of people who had like these little ridiculous pocket knives. And it ended up being like in the top 10 most prosecuted crimes in New York for like the longest time. And the truth is that most weapon bans are pretty ridiculous. I mean, you look at like the old AWB, you look at flash hiders, bayonet lugs. I mean, like it's okay to have a grenade launcher if you call it a flare gun attachment. You know, that's cool as long as there's no way to fix a bayonet on it. It's like most of these bans are literally based on like stupid movie ideas. I remember reading somewhere where something about how like automated blades were made illegal because at the time like popular villains in movies were using them, and so they were worried. It's same with silencers. Like silencers are I mean, people really think that these are like suppressors that, you know, you can fire a few shots in the back of a church and kill somebody, no one would know. When really these are still really loud, like little 22 loud, you know, just to, you know, to where you're not going totally deaf without ear protection when you fire them. So it's like a lot of these weapon laws are ridiculous. So
one thing I've noticed about weapons laws is that the people who write them obviously know nothing about weapons. I mean, these are all just technocrats and lawyers who've probably never picked up a gun or a knife in their life unless it was the butter knife at breakfast or something, because it's clear that the way a lot of these laws are worded and what the stated purpose of some of these laws are, it's obvious they know nothing about weapons per se. I mean, they write laws and nobody that actually knows anything about weapons would actually write. Well, this is interesting. In our stuck up bitch of the week report, a passenger with a PhD was ripped on social media for insisting that an airline call her doctor. The backstory of this is there was some person from Australia. She was a PhD, and she was upset because apparently on her airline ticket, you know, when you check in, your title, are you Mr. or Mrs. whatever? She checked doctor, but then employees of the airline were calling her Miss, and she got really upset because she wasn't being called doctor as she was properly supposed to be called. And she posted about this on Twitter. And apparently she's getting a lot of negative feedback saying, you know, get over it. It's just an airline ticket or something like that. I had a principal like that at high school. I remember there was this principal in high school that was doctor or something. I won't say his last name, but but he was actually a DED, a doctor of education. But I remember once someone called him Mr. whatever, and he said, I am not Mr. I am doctor. I have earned the right to be called doctor. You know, which is silly as hell. I teach myself, and I'm not actually a PhD. I guess my title would probably be something like MA, MS, ABD or something like that. But I always tell my students to call me by my first name. To me, Mr. Preston is my father. You know, so I always say, call me by my first name. I actually have two first names because my real name is Troy Keith Preston. So my actual first name is Troy. So a lot of my formal records are listed as that, but I've always gone by Keith since I was little. So I always tell them they can call me by either one of my first names or if they prefer Mr. Preston and things like that. But I just tell them to save the four letter stuff until they get their final grades. That's about the only limitation I have on that. I mean, but, you know, what kind of person goes on Twitter and gets upset about somebody didn't call them doctor at an airline at an airport? Yeah. Well, speaking of Twitter, Twitter bans Alex Jones and InfoWars. That's interesting because we've seen a lot of efforts lately by, these social media tech giant companies. We talked about this on a previous program. We talked about, how a lot of these tech giants are now trying to ban controversial people and, a lot of people from the political right are complaining about this, saying, well, our side's being discriminated against, although there are people on the left that have been attacked in this way as well. And, of course, you have the usual suspects on the left who are cheering on banning speakers from the right, Alex Jones or, you know, Milo Yiannopoulos and all these other characters. I guess there's two ways of looking at that. On one hand, we were talking about this a few weeks ago. We were talking about how in many ways, these social media platforms are public spaces. They're kind of like parks or something like that. On the other hand, I suppose we could say, well, you know, maybe everybody should just have their own social media platforms. There should be one for conservatives and one for liberals and one for the center and one for the far left and one for the far right and all these other things. But what brought this on, ironically, is there was a confrontation between Alex Jones and Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida who wanted to run for president, and Trump ended up knocking him out of the race. These two guys had a confrontation at a press conference. And we're just going to play a little bit of the clip from that right now. Do you want to roll that, RJ?
Go after freedom of
expression.
What about
the Democrats purging conservatives?
He's
not answering him. Just the Republicans are acting like it isn't happening. Thank God Trump is.
It's weird, man.
Oh, yeah, it's really weird. There's no purge of conservatives.
I don't know.
There's no shadow banning.
Are you concerned about bias in social media?
Yeah, who's this guy? We deplatformed.
Are you concerned about bias in social media?
Well, I think the bigger bias is against freedom of expression. Everybody should be. There's a look, I support
here.
Going after.
It's happening here, but you say I don't exist.
Yeah. Well, who are you? Who
yeah, sure.
This guy? I swear to God,
yeah,
I don't know who you are,
man. You better hope you can deplatform me. Tens of millions of views.
InfoWars.
Bigger than Rush Limbaugh. He knows who InfoWars is. Playing this joke over here. That's why the deplatforming didn't work.
But here's a question.
Wait, don't touch me again, man. I'm asking you not to touch me.
Well, sure, I just patted you nicely.
I know, but I don't want to be. I don't know you.
Me to get
I don't know who you are.
It's not just good.
You're not
going to
get arrested,
amendment.
Man. You're not going
to
get arrested.
To
I'll take care
amendment.
Of myself.
Oh, he'll beat me up.
I didn't say that.
You don't know who I am, but he's so mad. You're not going to silence me. You're not going to silence America.
Well, but there are people.
You are literally like a little gangster thug.
There are people in this country.
Rubio just threatened to physically take care of me.
There are people who feel
that
they are being
First Amendment.
Silenced. They feel like
he tells you China's the problem, which it is, but they're taking our
like
free
Google.
Speech right now.
So the big issue there is that Jones gets into this confrontation with Rubio. Of course, Jones is just being Jones. I mean, Jones is about trying to. Build as large an audience as he can, and he's done it. Alex Jones, I think, has something like 10 million followers or something like that. It's a massive audience.
Well, they're saying now that he's been. I think the New York Times came out and said that since he's been deplatformed, that InfoWars has lost half of its traffic, which is what's really interesting about this is when he pulls up on Rubio in this video, he goes, "Your whole crew is trying to deplatform me." Except for Trump. Thank God, Trump, Now, don't get me wrong. Like, if Alex Jones and Rubio were in a celebrity death match, I would want Alex Jones to win. But it's like, why is Alex Jones continuing to support Trump? It's almost like he received money from Trump or something. I can't understand why he continues to support Trump as some kind of radical outsider working from in against the New World Order and all this stuff. It's like, it's just ridiculous. But yeah, they said that he lost half of his traffic. Now, what's interesting about that is I don't know if the Wikipedia InfoWars page has been updated since, but I remember I looked at this page a couple weeks ago, and it said that he was getting about 10 million. And then CBS News came out with they announced the end of a television show called The Big Bang Theory on their network. It's some show about nerds. I don't watch it, but apparently Monday night is a very, very exciting night for people who watch. Like big television shows. It has the Monday night lineup. And this is CBS national broadcast on a Monday night slot. They said that this show that was going to be going off the air, that's in its last season or something, it was holding an audience of 20 million people. It's 20 million people. Now you got to think, more people watch television than listen to political commentary. So Alex Jones is mainstream. I mean, that's what I get from that. Alex Jones is mainstream.
Well, it seems to me he's trying to latch on to the Trump bandwagon. I mean, he realized that was a bandwagon he could really ride before he was this kind of, on the fringe outsider guy who lambasted all the Democrats and Republicans as tools of the New World Order and all of that. But then Trump came along as this kind of fall maverick and Jones jumped on the Trump bandwagon. I think he realized he could really build his audience doing that. So he's been able to do that. He's been able to build a mass audience as a de facto Trump reporter, Trump supporter. He's essentially become for Trump what Rush Limbaugh has always been for the traditional Republicans. Rush Limbaugh was a big cheerleader for guys like George W. Bush, or back when Clinton was in office, he was a big cheerleader for the opposition, like Newt Gingrich and all of those people. And now Trump is the big thing. He's the big conservative outsider, supposedly. So it looks like Jones has kind of moved into the spot that some of these other talk radio guys had before, sort of the leaders of the so-called conservative opposition, like Rush Limbaugh and all that. It'll be interesting to see if he's able to continue that, because on one hand, he has such fringy and extreme ideas, but on the other hand, he attaches himself to some mainstream figure like Trump. So it's interesting to see how he's going to be able to reconcile that. I'm wondering if he's going to be able to bring his audience, his mainstream audience of Trump supporters, I wonder if he's going to be able to bring them around to his ideas about all the conspiracies and all the kind of stuff that he gets into. So, or maybe he'll tone some of that down and move away from it. All right, in other news, of course, the protests have been going on at the Supreme Court, in Congress, over the Supreme Court appointee, this guy Kavanaugh. This guy Kavanaugh has been appointed to the Supreme Court. Just seems to be a standard brand Republican functionary. There's nothing special about him, and his politics seem to be the standard predictable Republican Party line about a lot of things. Whether he's any worse than a lot of the other people or most of the other people on the Supreme Court or anybody who would be likely to be appointed to the Supreme Court is debatable, but there have been a lot of protests against this guy, people disrupting the confirmation hearings in the Senate and all that. And of course, the senators, at least on the Democratic side, have been attacking him as well. One of them in particular is Kamala Harris. She's a senator from California, and she's the former attorney general of California. And I think she was the district attorney of the Bay Area of San Francisco at one point. And she's actually considered potential presidential material. There are people in the Democratic Party who are saying that she may actually be a candidate for president in 2020 or 2024 or something like that. So she's a rising star. But there was actually some commentary about her on Reason Magazine's blog, because she came out and she said something like there are no laws that control the male body. And what, of course, she's talking about is abortion. She's saying that, well, she's attacking Kavanaugh because Kavanaugh is a Republican, a conservative. I think he's also a Catholic. So he's pro-life or supposedly pro-life or something like that. It's the usual abortion politics. But she's talking about how abortion laws control the female body, but there are no laws to control the male body. And actually, Reason Magazine is attacking her on that, saying, well, she's actually opposed to sex work, to prostitution and all of that, because she was actually one of the people in California that was trying to crack down on Backpage when she was the attorney general there, accusing Backpage of sex trafficking and things like that. The writer at Reason Magazine points out, well, ultimately all laws control somebody's body somewhere. I mean, all laws are ultimately backed up by the threat of physical force or physical coercion. If you don't comply, you know, maybe you can say, well, that's justified or maybe it's not, but that all laws ultimately control somebody's movements or activities. But the funny thing about Kamala Harris, though, is that everyone that I know from the Bay Area says that basically she made her career by being Willie Brown's mistress. Like, Willie Brown was a politician in the San Francisco area and in California state politics. He was mayor of San Francisco. He was the speaker of the state house, I believe, the legislature in California. And so he's a big wig in the California state politics. He's been around forever. And she was apparently his side action, his kept woman or whatever at one point. And of course, he's about 30 years older than she is. Like, I think she's still in her 50s now, and he's in his 80s now. So, it's a classic story of a younger woman that advances her career by screwing a powerful older man. And so it's kind of interesting that she's a foe of sex work. I made a joke to someone recently. I said, if I ever interviewed Willie Brown as a journalist, the first question I might ask is, does Kamala swallow? Because it's an interesting and pertinent question, but it's also somewhat, it kind of rhymes as well. So, in other news, a daycare provider who hanged a toddler is sentenced to probation. This is an article from USA Today. This is something that happened in Minneapolis. Apparently there was a daycare provider, a woman who was mentally ill, and she tried to hang a toddler. Apparently the toddler didn't actually die. And also she was driving and tried to run over a couple of people and hit a couple of people in her car, but no one was actually killed. And she was sentenced to a long prison term, something like 180 months. So that's what, about 15 years or something like that. But it was suspended on the grounds that she's mentally ill and that she needs mental health treatment. This story's been making the rounds because there've been a lot of people, particularly the MRA types, the men's rights types, saying that well, if this was a man who did this, he probably would have been given a hard time in prison. But it's because it's a woman that did this, she's being let off as mentally ill and just sentenced to counseling and probation and things like that, which that may be true. I mean, there may be some truth to that, and that I do think a court would come down a lot harder on a man that did something like this than a woman. In the news of weird crimes, apparently some care center workers in San Francisco were charged with human trafficking and illegal weapons and things like that. So apparently it was a network of care facilities. The care facilities are like adult homes. These are places that supposedly help take care of old people or disabled people or mentally handicapped people or runaway children or abandoned children. There's different types of these places. But it is interesting, though, how these people were actually having had all these illegal activities going on, and they had this kind of front of operating care facilities. So it's a pretty bizarre case.
So hold on. So a gang of criminals were running care facilities?
Yeah.
So it sounds like a government, Keith.
Maybe they should just nationalize them and it'd be okay, or socialize them or something like that. And this was interesting. An article about anarchism appeared in the Teen Vogue magazine. Of course, Teen Vogue is what it implies. It's a teeny bopper pop culture magazine. And there's an article about anarchism in Teen Vogue. It's actually a pretty decent article. It's now the limitation of the article is the scope, in the sense that the person who wrote the article is an anarchist and a left social activist type of anarchism. And of course, they define anarchism as being that exclusively. They don't really talk about the range of the diversity of anarchist thought. And when I saw this article, I had somewhat mixed feelings about it. I thought it wasn't a bad article despite its limitations. And of course, the way to build a movement ultimately is through building a mass audience. And so for anarchists to have real political influence, obviously we have to have a mass audience, and ultimately that means going to a lot of lowbrow sources as a means of building an audience, and something like Teen Vogue magazine would be as good as any. So on one hand, I guess it's good to see an article about anarchism in a magazine like this. On the other hand, it kind of reinforces some of the negative impressions of what anarchism is, and that's, you know, the characters like these Antifa characters dressed, you know, in all black uniforms, vandalizing buildings and beating people up and that kind of stuff. But one thing, though, that I was thinking about this, because this article references the Antifa quite a bit. It even quotes Mark Bray, who's some sort of Antifa-leaning anarchist. But one thing I've noticed about the Antifa is they're not very threatening-looking people, even when they're decked out in all their usual accoutrements. Like, even when they have their masks on and their all-black clothes on and their shields and all that kind of stuff, they still manage to look like just a bunch of wimps and geeks and stuff like that. I mean, when you see them, when you see the Antifa in a protest, you know you're not dealing with the Navy SEALs. You know you're not dealing with the SWAT team. You know you're not dealing with the ATF. Now, this is not a law enforcement agency. You know you're not dealing with a right-wing militia group. What you're dealing with is just a bunch of loser college kids, basically, who are malnourished because they don't get enough protein from their vegan diets. So they're all skinnier than they should be. And they just have this look of being a bunch of wimpy looking characters that happen to put on these black uniforms to try to make themselves look scary or something like that.
Keith, I remember reading about how the Nazis, the SS, created their uniforms to make them appear to be taller, to look intimidating, to look scary.
Yeah, well, and particularly the SS uniforms, like the black. Well, the National Socialists in Germany, they were big on aesthetics. But it just doesn't seem to work for some of the people. It really is interesting how the two sides mirror each other. How the Antifa and the a lot of the neo-Nazi types, particularly the skinheads. I don't know about some of the other neo-Nazis, but definitely the skinhead types, and that, you know, they try to put on this image of being very fearsome, threatening people, but in reality they're often small in size. A lot of times they're underweight. They don't really look the part, in other words. A 15-year-old Swedish girl is cutting class to fight climate change. So I guess her thing is she's just going to boycott school until somebody does something to fight climate change. Which, you know, the thing is, you know, there was some protest in the United States recently over gun laws, because after this shooting at the Florida high school back a few months back, a lot of these kids, high school kids, started having anti-firearms or anti-gun protests or whatever. And this kid, David Hogg, started becoming a media celebrity. And at the time, I thought, wow, this seems like just a really convenient way to not go to school. Just go out and protest against guns, saying you're protesting against school shootings. And, of course, nobody's going to criticize you for doing that because nobody's pro-school shootings. So it seems to me this is really a way for kids to boycott school. What should happen is this. Like, kids all over the world, all over the country, or wherever, should get together and plot to have a multi-cause action the same day for some right-wing causes and for some left-wing causes. You know, so on one hand, you know, kids could say, well, we're going to go out and protest against guns. We're going to go out and protest against climate change or whatever, or things that the left doesn't like. And the other side could say, well, we're going to go and protest against we're going to protest against abortion, or we're going to protest against gay marriage, or something that the conservative side doesn't like, or we're going to protest against immigration. So you have all these high school kids walking out of school the same day for all kinds of protests, you know. So it's going to be like, who are you going to attack and who are you going to support? You know, because on one hand, Fox News, you know, they're not going to say, oh, these awful kids that are out there protesting abortion, you know, we can't, you know, because that's because their audience would probably be inclined to agree with that. Or on MSNBC, you know, Rachel Maddow is not going to say, oh, these awful kids protesting against guns or something like that. So if you had all kinds of protests, if the kids were organizing protests for both left and right causes and then blurring them all together, you know, like go out and have a rally where you have a pro-life sign right alongside an anti-gun sign and right alongside an anti-gay sign and right along a pro-environment sign and an anti-immigrant sign and a pro-police sign and something like that, you know, with, you know, Black Lives Matter sign. You could just really disrupt things a bit, you know, with that, and you throw everyone off. So kids, if you're listening and you want to get a break from school, that's what you need to do. You need to go out there and start protesting and make it something that where no one can really attack you. The president of South Africa says China is not Africa's new colonial master. The backstory to that is China has really gotten involved in doing a lot of business in Africa in recent times. And some of it's actually been helpful because the average income in some of the African countries has increased quite a bit. Like some of these Central African countries where the average income is something like $300 a year, the income has actually gone up to where people are making $5,000 a year, which is a 17, the average income has gone up something like 17 times. So that's some pretty impressive data there, which has also concerns that China is going to become what England and Belgium and France and Germany and some of those countries used to be, in the sense that they're just going to become the new colonial masters of Africa. And of course, the president of South Africa is saying, no, we're not going to let that happen. Of course, South Africa and China are allies. Like, they're all part of the BRIC axis, the Brazil, Russia, India, Iran, China and South African axis. So that may be the case that in the future we will see some serious economic development in Africa that's already going on now, largely through Chinese investments. There's also disputes about the nature of China's involvement in Africa. Like some people are saying, well, it's really just no different than ordinary trade. You just have a lot of Chinese businesses that are investing heavily in Africa, and that's contributing to economic development. And others say, well, it's more of a state-directed policy by the Chinese because ultimately they want to develop Africa as a colony, as an economic colony or a collection of colonies for China. But I'm not one that really gets into a lot of China bashing. And in the United States, on the right in particular, you see a lot of people that are into bashing China because they're supposed to be a great military threat to the United States or something like that, which I think is silly. Yeah. It's true. China has the second largest economy in the world after the United States. The United States has by far the largest economy. And so China has the second largest economy. But they're still a distant second, very distant second. And that's only because they have such a large population. Like China, like India has the third largest economy in the world. And the reason those two countries are number two and number three is because of their sheer population size.
Yeah, the thing about China being such a threat and all that is like China actually has a lot of problems.
Yeah, well, plus militarily, they're not nearly as formidable as a lot of people think. They only have one military base outside their homeland, and that's in East Africa, in the East African nation of Djibouti. So it's not like the United States has got military bases, hundreds of them all over the world. China has one.
Yeah.
A friend of mine who was in the military, was in the U.S. military, and who lived in China for a while and actually saw a lot of Chinese military parades, was telling me about one of the things that impressed him about the Chinese, or didn't impress him about the Chinese military, is just how decrepit a lot of their equipment is. I mean, a lot of it is basically old-fashioned Soviet model military equipment, still left over from the Maoist era. And so China's not nearly as formidable as a lot of people think. I know people who've lived in China who will say that if you go outside the large cities and the major commercial areas, that it's still definitely a third world country. I mean, people live like they do in the third world in rural China and smaller towns and stuff like that. You know, it's only in Shanghai and Shenzhen and Beijing and places like that. It looks like a developed first world country. All right, so no need to worry about the Chinese. All right, another article about demographics. How Indian Americans came to run half of all U.S. motels. And by Indian Americans, we're talking dots, not feathers. Let's see. That is interesting because they do run a lot of motels. I don't stay in a lot of motels, but whenever I come across one, I do see a lot of them are run by Indians. I mean, we're talking motels, not hotels. And motels are basically just low-cost hotels is what they are. There's an awful lot of those, and a lot of times they house a lot of sketchy people, drug addicts and all of that. But how did Indians come to run half of U.S. motels? That just the market they got in on and wanted to corner?
Well, no, you know what I think it is? I think, okay, so let me pull up this article real quick. It says in this article, it says here, they would give each other handshake loans, no collateral, no payment schedule, just pay when you can. Once a family purchased a motel, they would live there and the family members would do all the tasks needed to run it, from cleaning rooms to checking in the guests. So this is actually like tribal access to zero interest capital. Like here's a loan, right? No interest, just pay back these monies when you can, and for whatever business you're interested in, we're gonna help you, and you're gonna succeed. And whole families down to chip in on this, to dedicate a certain amount of time and work to make all these things happen, to take care of business. You know, in American culture, it's like we have this don't trust anyone Scarface mentality when it comes to taking or lending money to friends and family. It's like we have this sort of there will be blood industrial man individualism where it's like, you know, we think we're going to do it all on our own. And this is really like a mythical business belief. It's almost like we feel like ashamed, you know, to ask for help from friends and family. Like it's uncool to get help from your family. You know, this idea that we're going to be self-made bosses like Scarface or something. And you know, this isn't even it's like we have no problem taking money from non-family. Like we'll take a bank loan. You know, we'll take money from a bunch of strangers on a Kickstarter campaign. But it's like, we won't take money from family. And I think that's interesting because, I mean, look at these people. They own half the motels in the country now. And it's like for them, it's almost empowering to help each other out and to expand their operations and to kind of like to come into being, into success through one another.
Well, one thing about Indian Americans that a lot of people don't know is statistically Indian Americans actually are the highest income people in the United States in terms of average personal or family income. And this may have something to do with it. They're very entrepreneurial and they are, you know, more so than Americans are. They are very, I guess you could say tribal in the sense it's about helping out people in your own tribe or your own clan, or I don't know if they use those terms, but it would be, you know, just about helping your extended family and your community and things like that to develop. And I think that's true of people from other parts of the world generally, particularly outside the West. I have noticed that about among Indians, among Asians, among Arabs, among Africans, even to some degree among the Mediterraneans, like the Italians and Greeks and Turks, some of them, I see a lot of that kind of family, community, ethnic, whatever, maybe it's religion in some cases, interconnectedness that you don't really see as much of as about from, the stereotypical American culture, where it's all just about, you should be a self-made person. You should make it on your own. And it is, like you were saying, it's considered an embarrassment to ask your friends for money or ask your family for money and things like that. We do have that kind of culture where it's trust nobody. It's a very, almost like a very cutthroat culture. It's on everybody for themselves. I've had a lot of people from other countries tell me that too. I've had a lot of other people from countries, certainly outside the West, but even from Western, what are commonly thought of as Western countries, like Eastern European countries and Russia and places like that. I've had people from those places as well tell me that, Americans are just so cutthroat. They're just all about, themselves. They're just all about, every person for themselves, survival of the fittest, that kind of, gangster capitalism, I guess is what you might call it. From some, even some Western Europeans are like that. I mean, I've known people from Germany and France that say that. They say, Americans, it's just unbelievable how ruthless they are, how predatory they are in terms of business and money and how greedy they are. And, we have this reputation for being just really shallow people who only care about money and things like that. I've had a lot of Europeans even tell me that, it's unbelievable how shallow your people are and how ruthless you are, how selfish you are, how greed driven you are. So that's the state of the world for this week. This is Keith and RJ. On September the 9th, 2018, signing out for Kick the Puppy, and we'll be back next week. If you haven't listened to our past programs, they're in our archives at attackthesystem.com. Be sure to check out our website, attackthesystem.com, and you can find the archives of our program, Kick the Puppy. So until next week, have a good one.